sit at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Free.
Jump.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Like justice.
Justice.
Just this.
Just this.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
And protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Privacy.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Losers.
Men.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall. Will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression.
Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Culture.
Culture.
Human rights.
Cartagena.
Solidarity.
Responsibility.
I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International Volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by my co-host Gordon Barnes. And this week, we're going to focus on events in Russia in the aftermath of the Pussy Riot unauthorized performance in a Russian Orthodox church and the resulting charges, trial, and sentencing of the three young female performers. The whole affair is turning out to be an international embarrassment for Russia, and the protests continue. Good morning, Gord.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, that's really, it's kind of an interesting situation in Russia for Mr. Putin and the rest of the people in power in Russia. You've got three young ladies who decided to do a protest in maybe not a place that's particularly appropriate, and they've apologized for that, by the way.
That's right.
But it hasn't done them any good.
And now they've been sentenced for hooliganism and sentenced for 2 years in jail.
Right. And there are a lot of people upset with that, but it doesn't seem to move anybody. I'm just going to read an item from the Globe and Mail that kind of explains everything. If you're not familiar with what's happened there, this kind of explains the whole thing. I'm not going to read all the girls' names here because the pronunciation is a little difficult, and I'm not going to do a good job at it. So I'll just refer to them as Maria, Yasha, and Nadia. And the names lack the chilling starkness of the Manson family girls, but after being sentenced to 2 years in prison last Friday, these three artists, members of Russia's punk troupe Pussy Riot, displayed the same fearless contempt as the long-ago courtroom superstars, and a great deal of their outlandish chic. The Manson girls gravitated to skin carvings and mini jumpsuits. Pussy Riot prefers bright balaclavas with slashed-in eye holes and multicolored miniskirts. "I am not afraid of you," a defiant Alokina told the court. "I'm not afraid of you, and I'm not afraid of the thinly veneered deceit of your verdict at this so-called trial." Pussy Riot, however, are not murderers and are most certainly not in the thrall of a messianic troll. They're self-identified feminists, and they are artists who use their significant education and experience in their music, performance, and activism. They were, now famously, arrested for hooliganism after a seemingly impromptu protest-slash-performance at one of Russia's holiest sites, Christ the Savior Cathedral, wherein they sang one of their six songs, Virgin Mary, Put Putin Away, while straddling the soleus and praying extravagantly to the Mother of God. Detained in an actual cage before the trial, Pussy Riot received a fair amount of support from such stars as Madonna, and we've got an excerpt of some of Madonna's support there, Kathleen Hanna, Paul McCartney, Anthony Kiedis, and Sting, and have also drawn the attention of Amnesty International. Their antics are, in fact, acts of hooliganism. Such behavior at a church is hideous, but are they simply instances of the kind of controversial performance art enacted by certain celebrities of this world, monstrosses like Anne Liv Young? No. Look at one of Young's most recent performances, Mermaid Show, at New York's La Mama, a juicy slice of indulgence about women and the grotesque, which was amazingly oblivious to Divine's near-identical act in female artists like Young or Marina Abrovnik. Clearly the more impressive of the two, as the former's scatological bestial work never unfortunately involves self-injury. There's a mouthful. And they're trying to articulate contemporary theories about artists and audiences, about the spectacular and the spectacle, the uncertain lines between watching and participating. Meanwhile, the hardcore punk troupe Pussy Riot is jammed in the 1990s, venerating Sham 69, the Angelic Upstarts, Bikini Kill, and Riot Girls, and is simply trying to draw attention to gender disparity, basic civil rights, a repressive government bound to the church, and honesty, free speaking, and the thirst for truth, in Alokina's words. In other words, they are far away from the luxury of spitting raw fish at complacent art fans. They are genuinely rioting, as women once did in North America, to make their very female voices heard and registered. Bikini Kill's Kathleen Hanna has listened and has suggested a Pussy Riot Olympia, in which women from everywhere storm churches and scream in solidarity, "We are all Pussy Riot." This will never happen. Our feminist waves landed us on a sandy beach upon which we lament occasionally a bit of a bite or burn. Mainly, however, we raise our umbrellas to block out the vigor and blinding fury of the sun. But two positive cultural events have emerged from the shocking imprisonment and unusually cruel sentencing of the group. One, the word pussy has been on everyone's lips for weeks. It's hard to imagine a more simple and more complex way of disseminating the blunt, beautiful nature of the girl's mission, of perfectly centralizing this wild act of modern Mariology. At the same time, the spirit of feminism's third wave has been invoked, and with it, memories of an exciting time in which roles and choices for women felt, for the first time, infinite. On August 16, 1991, Hole's Courtney Love stage dove into the mosh pit at the Queen Margaret Union in Glasgow and was attacked. Love stated of this incident, and I quote, "I just dove off the stage and suddenly it was like my dress was being torn off me, my underwear was being torn off me, people were putting their fingers inside of me and grabbing my breasts really hard, screaming things in my ears like pussy, whore, cunt. And when I got back on stage, I was naked. I felt like Karen Finley." Love would write Asking For It about what happened, a song filled with questions about being assaulted, being raped, yet possibly asking for it. A song about performing as a powerful, dauntless woman, only to be ravaged and degraded, like an animal captured and stuck in a cage. Like the Pussy Riot heroines, whose names should be written with markers across all of our bodies, if only to remember an era in which we, too, were not afraid, and we also acted out. And that's from the Globe and Mail.
It's an interesting article the Globe had, and certainly the events relative to the trial of Pussy Riot and the members that were charged and convicted to 2 years in prison camp have really got quite a bit of international attention, Jim.
They do.
Since that time, news continues to be of concern relative to what's happening in Russia. People may be aware that former chess champion, Russian chess champion Garry Kasparov, and dozens of others have now been arrested outside the court. While other protesters have gathered around Russian embassies around the world, including New York and London, to protest the ruling. You know, the plan of the members of Pussy Riot at this point is to appeal the verdict to the European Court of Human Rights, but that obviously is going to take some time to evolve. And in the meantime, you know, Amnesty International regards all three women as prisoners of conscience and is calling for their immediate release. It's worth reflecting a little bit about the history of the band itself, in that, you know, they're a band that started as a collective with a commitment to use art to provoke and advance social change. And, you know, their view is that art is politics. To the extent that they're using their art, their music, to express their political views with respect to, in this case, Putin in Russia, has raised the issue of the lack of freedom of expression in Russia. And I guess that's a good way to introduce, I'll let you do that, Jim, our next clip of the show, if you like.
Okay, before I do that, I was just noticing that Russia has a human rights ombudsman.
That's right, and
he was actually appointed by Putin, and Russia's human rights ombudsman on Thursday called the prison sentences handed down to three women from punk band Pussy Riot excessive and warned that the case was igniting dangerous tensions within society. And as we said, they were convicted of hooliganism, motivated by religious hatred by a Moscow court, and Vladimir Lukin, originally nominated for his advisory role by President Putin, said he might challenge the sentencing of the three girls if their jail terms were upheld on appeal. So, wow, the plot thickens, you know.
That's right.
It's quite interesting. Okay, now I've got to maneuver. I got to maneuver myself here with my little computer, and I'm all set. And we'll play the clip of Madonna in support of Pussy Riot.
Yeah. refer to each other as human beings. Now, I'm very grateful and I'm very lucky because I come from a country, America, where we are free to express ourselves. Point of view. Even if other people don't agree with me, even if my government doesn't agree with me, I have the right to express my point of view. I have the freedom to express my point of view. This is democracy. Okay? And I do not take that for granted either. So, I just want to say a few words about Pussy Riot. I'm blessed to be from a country where I have the right to express my opinion, okay? But my dream and my prayer is that everyone in the world has this right. Not only here in Russia, but in France, in Iran, everywhere in the world, as human beings, we should have the right to express our opinions and still be treated as human beings.
Madonna went on to sing about love and that sort of thing. And if you happen to come across that clip on YouTube, you will notice that I did edit it a little wee bit. You didn't lose much. However, anyway, there's just one of many people of fairly high profile that are in support of Pussy Riot.
That's right. And, you know, it is an interesting evolution that she was even able to speak as she did in Russia. That was a very positive sign, I guess, that, you know, I guess it's due to her own international stature and claim to fame, if you can put it that way, that Madonna wasn't arrested for what she said. Other people have, as I mentioned, had their own freedom of expression in Russia restricted. And I mentioned before the clip what's happened in terms of our well-known chess player. But really, the arrest of the members of the Pussy Riot band is best described as only the tip of the iceberg at this point of time. Post the fairly disputed elections that took place in December 2011, there's been a lot of intimidation of activists, and it was a disputed election. The events just prior to, for example, in the spring of this year, prior to the swearing-in of Putin in May of this year, there was a march of a million in opposition to it was a protest in opposition to Putin, and one of the people arrested was Maria Baranova. She wasn't home at the time initially when the police broke in her front door. They took family photos, laptops, books, several white ribbons, which are the symbol of the protest movement against Putin. They also took a pink triangle, the symbol of gay rights activism. And, subsequent to that, she was arrested. She's been charged as well as many other people since his inauguration. As I said, the whole situation in terms of freedom of expression in Russia is quite fluid. Many people are having their rights restricted. And I guess it's worth reflecting for a few minutes back to some of the history of Russia, where, you know, during the 50 years or more now that Amnesty International has been in existence, we have worked on behalf of many prisoners of conscience in that country. Years ago, obviously, famous prisoners of conscience like Solzhenitsyn. Back in 1981, I was reading through some of our earlier reports about Russia. Obviously, 1981 was back at the time when it was still the USSR, and Amnesty reported that there were many, many prisoners of conscience at that point, people who were often held in forcible confinement and at that time in psychiatric hospitals, whether for their political, religious, or nationalist views that might not have been at that time approved by the authorities. And frequently there were violations of internationally accepted standards for fair trial and very harsh detentions of prisoners of conscience, and even at that point, the use of the death penalty. We moved forward to 1992, and of course, things had evolved significantly. By 1992, the USSR had actually really evolved to what would have eventually become the Russian Federation. There had been many prisoners of conscience released. People will probably recall the events of the failed coup against Mikhail Gorbachev, the president at that time. There was a trend at that time to the independence of former constituent republics of the USSR. And even within those republics, there were many people who had been prisoners of conscience. So I think we're getting fairly close now to the break time, Jim. And
yes, we are.
Is that right?
Yeah, we're getting close to the break. And we've got a piece here that it's kind of interesting because it is a number that's done by Pussy Riot. So if you're at all curious about what they sound like, they're kind of I don't know, how do we describe them? They're kind of punk rockers, I guess, in a way, but they're socially aware punk rockers who are striving to improve the situation for women, basically, and basic human rights. So anyway, we'll go to the break here right now, and after the break, we'll hear from Pussy Riot. That's Russia's punk troupe, Pussy Riot. And those young ladies are in jail for the next 2 years for estante pulled in one of their Orthodox cathedrals. The sentence is being appealed as being, well, a bit harsh for what they did, actually. We'll see how it goes. There's an awful lot of international support for them. And You always wonder just how much of a hard line the authorities are going to take.
That's right. You know, and before the break, we were talking about the sort of evolution of things in Russia where, you know, in the 80s, obviously, and prior to that, you know, there was fairly harsh, and that's an understatement, really, crackdown and continued punishment of people who were activists in the USSR. And then as things have evolved post the events of 1991 with the evolution to where there is now the Russian Federation and many of the other countries have separated from the Russian Federation, the Baltic countries, Ukraine and others, there has been a significant evolution in that country. And more recently, there's certainly been a growing demand for civil and political freedoms and social and economic rights. That's very evident in terms of the public discourse in Russia. The most recent election there last year in December of 2011 was highly disputed. There were demonstrations that followed the elections, some of the largest ever seen since the actual collapse of the Soviet Union. Protests tapped into a growing civic engagement throughout the year by individuals and other groups. There were significant concerns with respect to police abuses and significant discussion around topics, including the decline of support in terms of social services, and also a broad discussion about issues around the environment. So that whole evolution is being challenged in terms of the more recent crackdown on terms of freedom of speech. The people who are trying to challenge Putin, obviously, like the members of this punk rock band, are now facing significant restrictions in terms of their freedom of expression. I might mention as well, Jim, that LGBT activists have, in a very significant way, according to recent Amnesty International reports, have continued to face significant harassment and attacks. Attempted pride marches have been attacked and promptly, they were actually banned and then promptly dispersed by the police. It's also worth noting that, you know, journalists have been, who have attempted to report on any of the events in the last year and a half, in particular, have been often subject to significant human rights abuses. Some have actually been killed. One, for example, on December 15th, a prominent journalist, founder and editor of an independent weekly newspaper renowned for its critical reporting, was shot dead outside of his office. Other staff of the same paper have faced intimidation and harassment by the local authorities. There have been other journalists and human rights defenders who are really struggling to have their voice heard in that country. And I think it really will take the full weight of the international community to say to Russia, you know, and to the human rights defenders in that country, that there is support for change internationally. Mm-hmm. Hopefully things will evolve in a positive way, not just for the, you know, the three members of the band that we've been talking about,
right,
but for other people within that country.
One thing that I find a little disturbing about the whole thing is how Putin has the support of the Russian Orthodox Church, and apparently the patriarch of the church actually encouraged his parishioners to go out and vote for Putin, and also encouraged them not to go to the protests that you were talking about. So, to me, this is a dangerous kind of involvement in the political life of the country.
I think that's right, and you know, the interesting thing about that, just in the last couple of days, there have been reports about the leadership of the church actually indicating in their view that the sentences that have been posed in this particular case,
mm-hmm,
against Pussy Riot, in their view, were too harsh, calling for a different approach in terms of the sentencing.
Yeah,
so that's positive.
And I think what it points out too, as well, it's not so much that the government was supporting the church, you know, against that type of demonstration in their facilities. It's just they're wanting to repress dissent. That's the main intent here.
That's right. You know, it's worth just noting that the particular case and others that we are concerned about with respect to Russia are all available quite readily on the Amnesty website. You could go either to the international site, amnesty.org, or to the Canadian site, amnesty.ca, and quite easily find appeals that you can sign either online or write a letter on people's behalf. And I believe that that's very worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
To take a few minutes, I'd encourage people to do that. You know, our own group in Regina, many, many years ago, I recall, before the, referring earlier to the time when it was the USSR, years ago we wrote letters on behalf of a Baptist minister in Russia, and we were, you know, responsible for kind of leading the work on that particular case. He was eventually released after appeals from people all around the world, which was very positive. Interestingly enough, he was released and then rearrested, but eventually gained his freedom. And things do evolve, and I think we always are a little cautious about claiming that our in individual cases our efforts have been responsible, but I think in enough cases the international community and the appeals people send either by online or letters are worth undertaking.
Yeah, we need to be persistent and we need to be patient, but eventually in most cases we have a positive result.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's quite worthwhile, and you're quite right about the website. It's a very interesting browse. You know, if you go on to amnesty.org, I think you end up getting directed to amnesty.ca, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But they'll lead you through all the different issues that Amnesty has investigated, is keeping track of, and monitoring. For example, the Sudan. I think Alex Neve, is Alex still there in Sudan?
No, he's been back for a while now, and done some really good reporting about what happened in South Sudan.
Mm-hmm. But that sort of thing is ongoing, and that's part of why we need financial support. That is only supported by donations from Amnesty people who are members and people who subscribe to what Amnesty is attempting to do, and we get no money whatsoever from any government or any government agency. It's strictly done by supporters of Amnesty themselves. So in order to actually do the monitoring and organize these efforts to make sure that these human rights violations are made public and kept in the public eye, it does take money. So I just like to make a little appeal there right now that Amnesty can use the money.
That's right. You know, and that's sort of the hallmark of our approach, in that by not taking any money from any government around the world, we maintain our independence.
Yes.
In terms of any political perspective.
Right.
That's a key to Amnesty's history and our approach to human rights work.
Right. Yeah, you don't have to worry about Amnesty being influenced by any government agency, because we don't get any money from government whatsoever.
And if anything, you know, probably over the years we've, by virtue of the things we've said in terms of statements in support of various human rights issues around the world, not necessarily been thought of fondly by governments of different stripes, political stripes, but it's a reflection of our focus really on human rights is the key part of our work. So I think you were going to kind of, as we move away from this particular part of the program, share a bit of news, Jim, about another part of the world. And
well, we have an anniversary, a 30-year anniversary, just a couple of days ago on the 22nd of August in 1982, by the banks of the river at El Calabozo in northern El Salvador, over 200 unarmed people were murdered in cold blood by Salvadoran soldiers. The group of children, women, and men had abandoned their homes as they tried to escape from a military operation where soldiers saw families of ordinary people as legitimate military targets. Caught in a heavy storm, they sheltered for the night by the river, planning to move on in the morning, and they never got the chance. The legal case opened by survivors and relatives after the conflict ended was closed a year later with no results. despite all the evidence and eyewitness testimonies, and since then, every time it has been reopened, it has faced a new obstacle. The case was last reopened in 2006, but has still not progressed to trial 30 years after the massacre itself took place. So, we ask that you join the relatives and survivors of the El Calabozo massacre and the Madeleine Lagadec Center for the Promotion of Human Rights in exerting pressure on the president of El Salvador to take action on this 30th anniversary. The president has the ability to ensure that the families and survivors see truth, justice, and reparation in their lifetime. So you can go to the website and see how that happens.
And that was just, you know, 30 years ago this last Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I can recall the events of 30 years ago in El Salvador very well. And in that time frame, there were many other people who lost their lives in that particular country. Many people fled the country, and including many coming to Canada, including to Regina. Folks now who are very good friends of ours left El Salvador under very, very difficult circumstances. But, you know, that particular case and the appeals that Amnesty's working on relative to that one, where we're calling for justice for the people in that case from 30 years ago last Wednesday, is a good point to make as well, that in a neighboring country in Central America, there's been another development, and that is in Guatemala. And just this week as well, there has been what we believe is a very positive development, that a former police chief has now been sentenced by a Guatemalan court, and this just happened this week, to 70 years in prison for the 1981 disappearance and torture of a university student. And we believe that this is sending a very strong message, even after three decades, that justice can be delivered. You know, that sentencing took place on Tuesday of this week, and Amnesty was very involved in that particular case. The court found that the victim's torture and detention amounted to a crime against humanity. And it's taken over, as I mentioned, three decades for justice to catch up to the police chief in this case. However, we hope that because of this, there will be a very, very strong message and some, you know, measure of justice now provided to the family. The victim's wife in this case, by the way, told the court how she visited her husband in prison, in the hospital, following his arrest in a prison hospital, and he bore signs of having been tortured and been subject to beatings, waterboarding, cigarette burns, and electric shocks. You know, how that kind of thing can ever go on in terms of any individual in this day and age is just appalling. We believe that as a human rights movement that there must be a full disclosure of now the military archives from that same period, which could then help resolve the other cases in that country relative to human rights violations. Because during that 36-year internal armed conflict in Guatemala that began in 1960, an estimated 200,000 people have been killed, and including 45,000 who have disappeared and been tortured. You know, the development this week in Guatemala is positive, but the campaign for human rights for individuals in that country and for groups of people must continue. So I just like to say that there's been a positive development, mm-hmm. and we hope there will be one in El Salvador in terms of bringing justice for people there as well.
And that what that really tells us, though, we go back to being patient and persistent and not letting things rest. We just have to keep on it and not accept that these things happen, and make sure that whoever is responsible for them is brought to justice, and keep the awareness in the public's mind that these things are happening. And as we know all too well today, in the so-called war against terrorism that's being engaged in by the United States and other by our own country, we're part of it. In the course of that, prisoners that we have custody of have been tortured, and although Canada denies having anything to do with torture, there have been some circumstances in which prisoners have been given to organizations in which there's no reason to suspect that torture is not going to happen. So we seem to be slow to take responsibility for that sort of thing, and I think of that I always forget his name, is Mr. Harar, I think.
Mahar Harar,
who right. Who was given over to American authorities and sent off to Syria for torture. He was a Canadian citizen, and basically the Canadian government allowed this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this is unacceptable. So this is the sort of thing that we have to be aware of, and not ignore, and keep telling our elected officials that it won't be tolerated.
Yeah, you know, I thought maybe in the last few minutes of the show, Jim, it might be worth just reminding people. We've mentioned this previously, that for the listeners that are interested, we are planning a very major event. It'll be a provincial conference, a regional conference here in Regina for people who have an interest. If you've never been involved with Amnesty International but have thought about becoming involved and want to explore how you might contribute to our work, this will be in Regina on Saturday, October 13th, and we're going to be making all the details of that available hopefully early next week on our website. But just to share some of the details at this point, our theme for the conference is going to be Get Active with Amnesty International, or Get Active with Amnesty. And, you know, it'll be some really interesting learning opportunities for people. We're going to start with a morning panel at 10 o'clock on the Saturday morning with a number of great resource people, including the president of Amnesty International Canada. That's the person who holds the elected position as president. Her name is Sarah Beamish. She's a person who, you know, started in Amnesty International initially by attending one of our human rights colleges at Amnesty International AGM. And her roots are in Western Canada, but now is attending law school in the University of Toronto. We're really looking forward to Sarah coming. We're also very pleased that Hillary Holmes, who's the staff campaigner from our office in Ottawa, will be coming and participating in a panel on the Saturday, and presenting a workshop on the current situation with respect to the Middle East and North Africa, where the conflicts in Tunisia, Syria, Libya, and other countries have created such a significant human rights crisis, where now in Syria in particular, there is absolutely no security for average civilians. Large numbers, hundreds of thousands of people are having to flee the country to neighboring countries, which is creating all kinds of pressure on the neighboring countries, including, for example, Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey, as people flee, and neighboring countries are having to provide refuge. So we're very fortunate that Hillary is going to be attending and doing a workshop. Also, there will be a workshop on using the internet and social media for human rights work. And so people who might want to learn about blogging or Twitter or Facebook, and kind of how to put that all together to be more active in, you know, some area of human rights work. That would be a tremendous learning opportunity. We have a friend from Winnipeg, an activist, coming over who will be doing a workshop on creative activism, which I think people will be very interested when they see the information there. And then I should mention as well, prior to that, through the week, we'll be having a film festival here in Regina. All the details with respect to the films will be available, as I say, in, hopefully early next week. And people will be able to go. The entire process in terms of the conference and the film festival is free for people to attend. And we want to make it as accessible to people. It'll all be held at the university. The conference itself will be held at the University of Regina at Luther College. The film festival during the week will be held at a number of different venues, so it's, you know, available to people in different parts of the community, and it's a pretty exciting opportunity for people to become involved and learn more about our human rights work and how people can contribute. So
yeah, I think it'd be really worthwhile. You know, we talk about the sort of things that we do here in Regina. The basic thing is we get together every Tuesday nights for letter writing, and that's been a staple since Amnesty began, and it's still important.
It's crucial. I'm glad you mentioned that, Jim. It's always worth reminding people that you can join us on Tuesday nights in Regina at the Atlantis Coffee Shop in the vault. Mm-hmm. And it's at 7 o'clock, fairly informal, so if you're not there right at 7, don't worry. You could be there a few minutes late. Yeah. And all we do is visit and write letters on current Amnesty International appeals. And that's one of our strategies, but it's not the only one. And mm-hmm. the purpose of the conference really is to think about other ways and learn about other ways, share people's experiences and do some learning. And I think people will be pretty excited when they see the various workshops and opportunities. We're also going to be on the Saturday night of October 13th having an event that people can attend at the Artful Dodger with a variety of music, and it'd be fun to attend that as well. So it's going to be an exciting time, and encourage people to, you know, maybe wait for a few days, but check it out. We'll have all the details linked from our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca, so you'll be able to find it. Or you can check out our Amnesty International Saskatchewan Facebook page. And if you go there and click like, you'll be able to get updates about what we're up to.
Excellent. Well, guess what, Gord? Time's up.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a great discussion and
yeah.
Good to be here.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Our goal is to increase the awareness of and contribute to a discussion of human rights issues at home and around the world. To discover how you can contribute to the abolition of human rights violations, visit our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca or check out our Facebook group at Amnesty International Saskatchewan and follow the links. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."